This is a Crestview Bible podcast. For more information, visit crestviewhutch.org.
Well, I'm going to begin the sermon with a big word, and the big word is called contextualization. Contextualization. And it helps us understand, contextualization is a word that gives us understanding for how we live in the here and now. So, all those alive in this room today, which hopefully is all of us, all those alive, we're found in a context. We're found in a way of living. All the conditions and the realities that surround us give us context. So we are largely Reno County dwellers, although there are some exceptions from visitors and people that travel, stuff like that. So let me ask you this to get us into the contextualization question. If I was to ask you, what's the island greeting you would send to me in a land where palm trees sway, what would your answer be? Okay, some people get it, right? Mele Kaliki Maka, right? Mele Kaliki Maka. That is the Hawaiian way to say Merry Christmas to you. Mele Kaliki Maka. That's something about contextualization. That's the kind of greeting that you might get in the land where palm trees sway. A friend reminded me this week, and I needed to work that in because when I'm hearing this song, I'm thinking, Mele Kaliki Maka is a wise way. That's how I always thought it was. It's a wise way to say Merry Christmas to you, but it's actually Hawaii's way to say Merry Christmas to you. It's a contextualization issue. This is what Christmas greetings look like in Hawaii. And the more profound question for us that relates to contextualization is that question of what does Christmas mean to us? How does it affect us? How does it affect people in our context? People that are here now, today, this morning. How does the truth of all this, how does the reality of Emmanuel, this idea of God being with us, how does that affect us? That's why Emmanuel and us. And so we're in a series called O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. And in this series, we're using the old Christmas carol, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, to give us a springboard into the scriptures to help us see why Jesus has come. This series really encourages our reflection on this old carol. We reflect on that as a way to springboard and long for Jesus. That's what we're trying to do. We're longing for him to come. And so we talked about that in two ways. When we use this word Advent, there's the first Advent or the first coming or the first arrival of Jesus where he came as a baby, and that's what we're celebrating at Christmas. We're thinking about him coming to be a baby born in a manger and all that announcement like we saw this morning, the angelic announcement in Luke 2. Amazing stuff leading up to Christmas Day. So we're putting ourselves in the shoes of those first century people to realize, okay, what would this have been like for them to long for Jesus coming? And then we're also, now that Jesus has come that first time, we're also expecting a second Advent. I mean, one of the Christmas carols we sing actually says that, right? Second Advent from above, reinstate us in your love. We're thinking about him coming again. So Paul promised us in 2 Timothy 4:8, this is a great promise, that God has laid up a crown of righteousness that God's going to award to us on the day that Christ returns for all those who love his appearing. I mean, what a promise, right? That if we celebrate Advent right, and we long for his return, and we love his return, we love his appearing, there's going to be a crown of righteousness awarded to us. I don't know what that means. I'm not saying like it's Bitcoin that doesn't even exist anymore or whatever, I guess, whatever. I'm not saying it's some sort of gift like that. It's something that God is going to impart to us. He's promised to reward us on that day. So there's something to calibrating our hearts to this theme of his coming, to calibrating our hearts to what it looked like for us to long for them to long for that first coming, and then what it looks like for us to long for his second coming. Now, for his first appearing, God wowed us and left us speechless. I don't know if you think about it that way, but let me see if I can put it in context. So think of this. God had not spoken to his people for 400 years. Now, I know we hear that and we're like, yeah, 400 years. Okay, well, they got through it and Jesus came. Good for them. But, I mean, just think about this. From the time the pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock until today has been 400 years in the United States. And imagine, for all that time, God was silent. No prophet. Just silence. I mean, do you feel the gravity of that? How long these people were languishing. They had nothing to cling to but all these promises of God in the Old Testament. So they were scouring the Old Testament. They were trying to listen and re-listen to what the prophet said. Many believe that, like the Jewish scholars today believe, that Malachi was the final prophet and that Jesus hasn't come yet. And so they're still waiting for what Malachi promised, you know, that there's going to come someone. Now we see that Malachi said there's going to come someone before the Messiah who's going to be like an Elijah-like figure who's going to tell us of his coming, and we know that happened with John the Baptist. But think about the languishing, 400 years of silence. Nothing to cling to but the promises that were made in the law, the writings, and the prophets. And then Jesus comes, and he doesn't come like beamed down from heaven, like from the star USS Enterprise, you know, like, boom, I'm here, you know, with a sword on his thigh, you know. No, he comes as a baby. All the promises, all the hopes, they're all centered on a baby. The one who made the world needed his parents to change his diapers and to feed him. I mean, I hope you know that. Jesus, because he was the Son of God, still had to have diapers changed, being fully human. He still had to be fed. He came dependent like that. And up pops John the Baptist saying, hey, the Messiah is coming. 30 years later, you know, he's coming, and he's, obviously we know they're cousins. So we're left marveling of what God's plan was, how God's plan was coming. And for his second coming, I mean, it's going to be equally as marvelous, right? We'll no doubt be equally wowed. Every eye will see him. That's what the scriptures say. Every eye will see him. The King of Kings and Lord of Lords will split the sky and come down, and he will be with us. He'll judge the living and the dead, and he shall reign forever. I mean, it's going to be incredible to see. So anticipating these realities, one that looks back with awe and wonder at what God did in sending Jesus the first time, and then one that looks forward with anticipation. I mean, I'm trying to say all this to help us feel the wonder of this and that there's a connection to us through all this. So that's where we're headed today. The hymn digs into this. The hymn propels us and points us in this way. So we sang those verses this morning. O come, thou day spring, come and cheer our spirits by thine advent here. Disperse the gloomy clouds of night and death's dark shadows put to flight. And O come, thou wisdom from on high, and order all things far and nigh. To us the path of knowledge show, and cause us in her ways to go. So as we jump into the scriptures today, with this song and these realities kind of giving us context, I hope you know that God coming near to us changes us dramatically. It affects our lives. You may not realize even in this moment, right at the start of this sermon, how desperately you need Jesus to come, how desperately you need to long for him to come, how desperate you are for him to come through. So today, that's where we're going to go. Join me as we see two connections of Emmanuel's coming to us, two connections between us and Emmanuel as he comes to us. And this begins in Luke 1. So let me read this. Luke 1, let me read verses 76 to 79 to give us some sense. This is from Zechariah's prophecy, and we'll talk more about that in a second. But let's just hear what these verses say. Beginning in verse 76, here's what we read. And you, child, will be called the prophet of the Most High, for you will go before the Lord to prepare his ways, to give knowledge of salvation to his people in the forgiveness of their sins, because of the tender mercy of our God, whereby the sunrise shall visit us from on high, to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace. This is God's word. Thanks be to God. So two connections of Emmanuel's coming to us. And the first connection is that our dark, gloomy lives need Emmanuel's dawning. Our dark, gloomy lives need Emmanuel's dawning. Dawning. We see this in Luke 1, and Luke 1 is a great place for us to go to learn something about Emmanuel's coming. So in the opening verses, we get the gist of Luke's aim. Luke was compiling an orderly account of what had taken place when Jesus was on the earth. And his goal in giving us this orderly account was that so that we would have certainty about the things that we've been taught, certainty about what we believe. And this passage that speaks, in this passage we just read, it speaks of Emmanuel coming to take away the dark gloom from our lives. This is part of Zechariah's song. So when you see Zechariah here in Luke 1, it's different than the Old Testament prophet Zechariah. This is Zechariah, who was a first century servant in the temple. He was serving in the temple, and he was given this prophecy that a son would be born to him and his wife Elizabeth, and the son's name would be John. He would go before the Messiah to make ready for the Lord a people prepared. And get this, I mean, like the people of Israel dealt with 400 years of silence, Isaiah gets this news and immediately becomes mute and can't speak until the child's born, until this prophecy's fulfilled. He's unable to speak. I mean, that's crazy, isn't it? Why all this silence? 400 years of silence, and now Zechariah comes out of the temple. He's given this prophecy. We're gonna have a child. This is a huge thing because they were older. It's not like God hasn't done that before, because we know the story of Abraham and Sarah, but I mean, again, God hasn't spoken for 400 years. So Zechariah is given this prophecy, and then he comes out and he can't say anything, right? I mean, it's just silence. It's an amazing promise. So those around him knew that he had seen something extraordinary and he had received a vision. The angel Gabriel had appeared to him and made these things known to Zechariah. But it seemed so dark and gloomy for them, right? For Zechariah and Elizabeth, barren and advanced in age. But God came with news, and this led to joy. And do you think Elizabeth was like ready to tell the world that she was pregnant? No, she was like very, the Bible says she was hiddenly, she had a hidden gratefulness. A hidden gratefulness. She was grateful that God was going to come through, but she didn't exactly want to tell everyone about this. She kept these things hidden, and she said, "Thus has the Lord done for me in these days when he looked upon me to take away my reproach among the people." So on one level, God's breaking his silence, and he's speaking to Zechariah, and this caused life's dark, gloomy nature to change, right? He had good news that had come to them. Good news had come to Zechariah and Elizabeth. God was going to do something. Their dark, gloomy lives were about to change. And in a sense, the giving of John spoke of Emmanuel's dawning, that now something was going to change for the rest of the people. So when John was born and he was to be named, he was getting ready to be circumcised on the eighth day, Zechariah's lips were opened and he blessed God. And that's where we get the passage that we read this morning. His blessing makes up these verses that are in your notes today. And look at how he centers on his son John, who we know as John the Baptist. He's going to be a prophet of the Lord Most High. He's going to prepare ways for the one who's coming, that God's salvation and his forgiveness might be made known to the people. And this whole thing is a tender mercy of God. I mean, isn't that an incredible description? It's a tender mercy of God. Tender mercy of God. And that would undoubtedly have been, right? So tender mercy of God, having not seen or heard from a prophet in a long time. Now here's a prophet who said something, and he has a child, kind of the prophecy came true, and he's blessing God, and he's prophesying and saying, this is what's going to happen. God's intending to bless his people. He's going to keep his promises that he's made, and he's going to bless his people with great news and with tender mercy. But the news gets even better, right? In verse 78, that there's going to be a sunrise that would visit them from on high. I mean, what an incredible picturesque language, right? I don't know what your favorite sunrise is in Kansas. I love when I travel to see family and I travel east, and if we're leaving early in the morning, sometimes I'm hitting the Flint Hills right when the sunrise is coming up. I know some people believe like this is the end of the earth, but that is gorgeous when the sunrise is coming up over those Flint Hills. And what Zechariah is saying is there's going to be a great sunrise that's going to take the breath away of God's people. I mean, he's going to come through for them. The sunrise is going to come. Light would come to those who sit in darkness. This is the effect. And who sit in the shadow of death to guide our feet into the way of peace. I mean, do you ever feel that? Do you ever feel like you're sitting in darkness? Do you ever feel like you're sitting in the shadow of death? Do you ever feel like, is there ever a longing in your heart like, oh, if someone would just guide me into the way of peace, show me what to do, change hearts, make this right. Could someone just come through? Those longings, don't you feel that? Longing for light to come in some dark situation that you find yourself in? Where the shadows of death are casting long and dark streaks upon our lives. I mean, the shadows of death that could come as we're battling our own health struggles and we just want to die sometimes. It'd be better if we were dead. Death is casting these long, dark shadows upon our lives. Or maybe it's just the memories we have of people that have gone, and death is casting a long, dark shadow in our lives. And we're just wondering, like, in this moment, what do I cling to? What do I hope to? How can my life be affected? Dolly Parton famously lamented how this season comes with these kinds of struggles, longing that if we could just make it through December. If we make it through December, you know, just these realities. I mean, for some reason, isn't it crazy that at Advent sometimes these things come? At this season of Christmas, the season of perpetual hope, you know? We're in the season of perpetual hope, and yet somehow this is all creeping up here. And so I wonder what laments are filling you right now. What laments do you face? What gloomy clouds of night need to be dispersed in your life? What dark shadows of death are weighing on you? And it's crazy. I mean, the stuff that comes into our minds this time of year. I mean, you know what I was thinking about last week? Man, I'm about to outlive my dad. My dad died when he was 46 years old. And I called my mom and I was like, Dad died when he was 48, right? So I'm about to outlive him. And she's like, no, he died when he was 46. You outlived him a long time ago. Okay, Mom. But why did that thought come to me this week? That's weird. Like, some of you are like, you need to see a counselor. I'm already seeing a counselor, okay? That's okay. Right, yes, I have issues. It's okay. But this time of year could just be so heavy. And what am I to say to myself? Like, you know, some of you might like, Phil, don't you believe in Jesus? Like, this is, you know, not the end. Right, I do. And so why am I having these thoughts? I mean, it doesn't make it any easier, right? These memories are just part of the season. And for some of you, like, you think back of the season and you think back and there's maybe memories of abuse or hurt emotions or estranged family or things that have created distance. You might remember back to happier times. You might remember back when things used to be different. There was a different situation. All these dark shadows, all this reality weighing. And it comes just by celebrating Christmas, Advent. Whether it's something nostalgic or simply that tension, it's this longing that, Jesus, would you come and make this right? Jesus, I need you to come right now into this situation in my life. We need him to come. And that's what Zechariah is assuring us that God will do. He will come. This sunrise can visit us from on high. Our dark, gloomy lives need this day spring to come. We need him to dawn in our lives in this way. We need him to come and cheer our spirits by his advent here, by his coming here. We need him. So we need Emmanuel to come. We need his cheer. Maybe even more so in this season than any other time of the year we need him to come. And so the question I have for you this morning, as it relates to Emmanuel and us, do you have that kind of need? Do you sense this kind of need? I need you, Jesus. There's nowhere else I can go. There's nothing else I can cling to. I mean, I'm looking at sorrow after sorrow, and I need you to come and change my heart. I need you to dawn. I need you to be the sunrise. I need you to give me good news in this moment. That's what Zechariah is saying. I'm going to come. There's good news on the way. He's coming, and it's found in Jesus. We can look to him. And so some of you, it might just be, you just need to pray and say, God, my life's just a mess. I need you. I have nowhere else to run. I've tried everything. I've tried everything. I mean, in this season, we try everything, right? Like, well, to make up for the sucky childhood I had, I'm going to, like, shower my children with gifts. Or to make up for all this emotion I feel, I'm going to really enjoy this Christmas party I get to go to. And I'm going to drown it all away so that I don't remember anything. Or I'm going to get an extra handful of cookies like Grandma used to make, and these are really enjoyable. We press into all those things. And again, the Bible's not saying, like, you can't have a drink at a holiday party, or you can't enjoy the cookies, or you can't. The Bible's saying, like, there's something that Jesus offers that is quantitatively and qualitatively different. There's something that the very fact that Jesus has come changes the reality that you're facing in life. So are you looking to him? Are you looking for him to dawn and to give you that kind of hope? So this is what we're being drawn to. We need Emmanuel to come and to dawn on us. We need his dawning. We need his illumination in this moment. We need him to come and shine and dispel the darkness, because for many of us, this season is a dark, gloomy, oh, come. Come with your advent. Come with your coming here. Come in this moment. And so Zechariah is prophesying about this first coming, that Jesus is going to come and that's going to change everything, right? There's going to be a dawning. There's going to be salvation's going to come, forgiveness. God's going to come through on all those promises. And then for those of us who are here on this side of those promises, we're anticipating him coming again. I mean, and what have we promised in the new heavens and the new earth? Tears are wiped away, you know. We get fellowship with him eternally. I mean, don't you long for him to come? Don't you want to be with him forever? I mean, this is what this season is provoking out of our hearts. It's calling us away from all this to just come and illuminate us, shine into my heart. I need you. So how might you draw near to him in this season? That's the first connection here. That our dark, gloomy lives need Emmanuel's dawning. Secondly and finally, we also see that our tragic, blind ways need Emmanuel's wisdom. Our tragic, blind ways need Emmanuel's wisdom. So turn over with me to Isaiah chapter 11. Isaiah chapter 11. There are some incredible prophecies related to Emmanuel coming from the pen of Isaiah. I mean, the fact that, Matthew actually quotes that in Matthew chapter 1, Isaiah 7, telling us that a virgin will conceive and bear a son, and his name shall be Emmanuel. That's Isaiah 7. Or Isaiah 9, telling us that a child will be born to us. Unto us a son is given, and his name shall be Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. So Isaiah is kind of bent on giving voice to Jesus coming. Well, here in chapter 11, in the opening verses of chapter 11, we're told, look at these two verses, Isaiah chapter 11, verses 1 and 2. Let me just read here. There shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse, and a branch from his roots shall bear fruit. And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. So, in these opening verses of chapter 11, we're told that there shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse. So you know what the picture is there, right? There's like this stump in the ground that's been cut off. And I know in our modern age, there's a way like, well, you know, if you could strap a chain around that stump and then hightail it out, you could pull that stump right out of the ground. Yeah, of course, right? But they didn't have 4x4s and chains back then. When Isaiah is given this prophecy, there's a stump in the ground, and somehow from this stump, there's blossoms coming from the stump around that from this stump shall come these shoots, these branches that are going to bear fruit. So it's something, and we know from Jesse, Jesse was King David's father, so probably from the household of David somehow, there's going to come this shoot that's going to bear fruit. So probably pointing to an offspring of David, and we know that this isn't just some good guy coming. This isn't just, wow, you know, I hope he's a great guy, and I hope he's a ruler just like his father David or something. Or we might, knowing the Bible, we might think, I hope he's really unlike his father David, because that was a train wreck after he beat Goliath and became king. It was a train wreck. So verse 2 clarifies all this, right? That this is a different kind of guy. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge, and the fear of the Lord. So this coming one is very distinct from us. Our ways tend to be tragic and blind. So we may know the right way we need to walk in. Like, we may know the right thing to do, but are we actually walking in it? I mean, some of you are like, well, I'm here this morning. Isn't that part of it? Well, of course. Like, you got it right today, right? You got it right at 10:15 on a Sunday morning. But let's take this out for a spin. When somebody, how do I put it kindly, over-torques the screw at work. When somebody takes you into Crazy Town for the afternoon, what are you going to do then? Does it work then? So we know the right way to act, but what about when we get triggered or when we are taken off of our game? So this hypocrisy, this, and I'm calling it hypocrisy because we know the right thing to do, but we don't always do it, is what makes our lives miserable. So we feel like, oh, blew it again. Drat. How can I get this right? Our consciences, even if they're seared, right? Even if they're calloused, they're calling us to better ways of living. Like, we instinctively feel that. Like, there's got to be a better way here. There's got to be a better way to live. Like, even lost people on the street feel this. Like, you know, I'm bothered by this thing, and, you know, I've tried this, and I burned this incense that I got down at Smith's Market, and I try to have this kind of coffee in the morning, and things just don't seem to be working for me. So our world is even trying all kinds of things. Even their consciences feel like there's something they could do differently. Something that, a better way to live. But we can't put together a string of good choices if we had to. And yeah, I know a lot of us in church life, we can string together a lot of what seem to be outwardly good choices, but inwardly, what's our motive for that? That's the issue, our hearts. So how are our hearts going to change? We're often also blind to the ways that we need to walk in. So have you ever been stuck in some sort of problem? Like stuck in some sort of relational mess? Or maybe you're just stuck in your own head. I mean, that's happened to me. I'm locked into some emotion or some anxiety, and I can feel like I can scarcely find a way out. There's a short album that was just released by a famous singer that puts desires as ultimate, not God's wise ways. So here's the lyrics. Fire on fire would normally kill us, but this much desire, together we're winners. They say that we're out of control, and some say we're sinners. But don't let them ruin our beautiful rhythms. Because when you enfold me and tell me you love me, and look in my eyes, your perfection, my only direction, it's fire on fire. In other words, like, with this kind of desire, what's wrong with it? So, I mean, we get locked into that. I'm not being critical of the song. I'm just saying it's a good statement of reality. Like, man, I feel that. Some feeling can easily trump what I know the right thing to do is. Some feeling can easily grab hold of my heart and mind and lead me into a way of living that I know is not going to be helpful. So what's most determinative for my life is not necessarily my passion, my desires, my emotions, my anxieties, my feelings. All those things are looming and they're real. But I need this one with the Spirit of the Lord resting on him, with the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. I need him to inform me. I need him to direct me, not my emotions, not my feelings. So I hope you understand the distinction I'm making here. Like, I'm not trying to say your feelings aren't real, your emotions aren't real. I'm saying we give them an ultimate priority at times that probably isn't helpful. And I mean, it probably happened to me sometime this morning even, where my emotions overwhelm me. So what's my hope in that moment? This is what I'm driving at. This is our need for Emmanuel to come with wisdom. So speaking of God's wisdom is more than just some more ingenious ways to live than the alternatives. That's not what wisdom is. Our world talks about it that way. Like, wisdom is like the wisest way to brew coffee. I can run to this because I feel like it's an area of expertise for me. The wisest way to brew coffee is to get water that has not been defiled by the tap system. So use distilled water for the best flavor, maybe. And then you want beans that are fresh. You can ask Luke about that. You want beans that are ground a certain way, depending on what kind of filter you're using. So wisdom is not like that. Wisdom is not like, well, here's the best way considering all the alternatives. Like, yeah, you could just pour tap water in, but you really need distilled water. That's a kind of wisdom, but it's not like what we're talking about here. Walking in wisdom, biblically speaking, is being governed by fearing the Lord and living out of a relationship with him. That's what it means to walk in wisdom. It means that he's everything, that he's primary. We're governed by fearing him. We're in reverence to him. And we're relating to him, and then that's overflowing and spilling out of our lives. So Isaiah connects all of this, that a stump of Jesse is going to bear fruit. There's going to be a descendant who's going to come from Jesse that's going to come and have God's Spirit full of wisdom, counsel, understanding, might, knowledge, fear of God himself. And we know this is exactly what Jesus came to do. So turn with me to Hebrews chapter 1. Hebrews chapter 1. Right in these opening verses of Hebrews, we get introduced again to Jesus. Look at verse 3. Jesus is the radiance of the glory of God. So there's the dawning, right? There's the dawning coming into our lives. Jesus is the radiance of the glory of God. Jesus is the light. He's the effulgence. He's like the glory of God has appeared, and Jesus radiates that. He's the dawning. He's showing who God is. He's the radiance of the glory of God, and he's the exact imprint of his nature, and he upholds the universe by the word of his power. He upholds the universe by the word of his power. So Emmanuel, God with us, gets figured as this figure taking on human flesh. He's with us. He's the radiance of the glory of God, the exact imprint of his nature. All that we'd expect to get with God is seen in Jesus. And he dawns with that kind of brilliant glory that God does. So when you are in the midst of your dark, gloomy existence, and you kneel down and say, Jesus, come, just like shepherds meeting the glory of God on the field, keeping watch over their flock by night, Jesus comes and brings God's glorious brilliance into your life. He comes and can bring that kind of reality to you. He can bring that kind of illumination to you. It dispels the dark, cloudy realities we face. And with this comes this other picture, that he upholds the universe by the word of his power. So we have one who orders all things far and nigh, who orders all things far and near. He can show us how to live. He can inform what it's like to cause us to go in these ways, where we don't have to be governed by our emotions. We don't have to be governed by anxieties. We don't have to be paralyzed in this world. No, we can have God's ways. Like we can, to us, the path of knowledge show and cause us in our ways to go. He can show us what it is to really live. That doesn't mean you're never going to have an anxiety. It doesn't mean that you're not going to have emotions. God's made you that way, right? That's part of our makeup. It means that somehow in the midst of that, I'm going to have hope because Jesus is with me. And I can cling to him. I can lament to him. I can cry out to him out of all of my mess, and he's with me in that mess. And he's informing, and he's clarifying. And when I'm stuck, I can lean into him, and he's near. This is what God with us means. Think about that. God with us. Emmanuel and us. So what I'm saying is God didn't just do all this so that we could sing nice songs and it could be some out there kind of thing. God did all this so that your and my life could be affected right here, right now, today. He came so that we could have hope in the midst of all the mess that we live right now. Because Jesus has come to us, everything about our lives can change. Whether it's our lives or how we're walking, Emmanuel provides all the stable answers that we need for living. He gives these. He's wisdom embodied. He's clarifying all this for us. So in conclusion, we've seen two connections of Emmanuel's coming to us, that our dark, gloomy lives need Emmanuel's dawning, and our tragic, blind ways need Emmanuel's wisdom. So do you look to Jesus? I mean, be honest. You don't have to lie in church this morning. I'm not asking if you, like when you come to church, if you would shake your head yes. I'm not asking that. When Jesus is the obvious answer, I'm also not asking, do you intellectually assent to the reality that Jesus is pretty wicked awesome? I'm not saying that. I'm not saying like, hey, who's on the Jesus team today? I'm not asking that. I'm saying, do you look to him? Do you cling to him? Do you have a relationship with him where he informs actually how you live? Where he's clarifying that? I mean, think of the life you live. Is Jesus illuminating it in any way? Is he informing it in any way? Or are you just defaulting to, well, why can't I do what I want to do? I mean, I think that's the reality that when I'm not looking to Jesus, that's the reality I'll fall into. You know, why is this guy trying to cramp my style? I want to do this. You know, who does he think he is? And then I back off like, oh, he's Emmanuel. Like he's God with us. He's different, right? So are you looking to him? And on top of that, are the infinitesimal decisions that you're making leading to him? Or are they just leading to more tragic, blind ways? I mean, don't you feel deep down that there has to be a better way to live than what you're currently doing? So you might be here and think, well, you know, I've tried a lot of ways. I've tried Jesus. Really, have you? Like, have you gone all in? Or is this just like something you like to try on the weekends? You know, have you really gone all in with him? We don't want to go all in because we want to lean on our own wisdom and understanding and not his. And so today I'm saying that Emmanuel has come to affect you. Your life can be different. Your ways can be informed. So will you find hope in Emmanuel? Will you look to him? Will you turn from your life and your ways to his life and his ways? Will you put your confidence in him? Will you believe in him? Will you trust him as the compelling reality of your life? That I have a relationship with him. So you probably have heard this from pastors before. I'm not asking you to join this church. I'm not asking you to go like barbecue kittens in a back alley somewhere. Like, I'm just asking you, do you have a relationship with Jesus? Like, it's more than just on a weekend when it's convenient for me, I'm coming and hanging out with church people, and this, I don't know if this is really what I'm after. Do you really have a relationship with Jesus? Emmanuel has come, and he's come to dawn into your life, to dispel the dark gloom, and he's come to give you, like, to inform the way you live. He's come to get into the nitty-gritty details of your life. He's not come to be like some really cool guy that's some dreamy thing out there, like Teen Beat magazine or something. No, he's come to like move in and change things. So have you believed in him? Have you trusted him and said, yeah, Jesus, take over. Come, change me. That's what we're inviting you to today. And if you're a believer, this is a challenge for us as well, isn't it? So you might think, well, I did that 50,000 years ago in the magical land of make-believe, back at Vacation Bible School or Awana or something. I don't know where this has come from. Actually, I do know where it's come from, I think. But we tend to drift from sure things to unsure things. Like, we tend to drift from the reality that, like, it's sure for us to things that are unsure. We think that once we believe in Jesus, so this is what I mean by that. Once we believe in Jesus and once we have a relationship with him, then I can check out of having my heart nurtured by him. Like, the relational thing's over. I got that licked. Like, I've already done that. Really? This morning? Did you do that? Like, did you do that yesterday? Did you do that, like, anytime over the last week? So I'm not saying that what happened a long time ago in your life wasn't real. I'm saying, like, does this continue to inform you? Like, a relationship, like, it's not like the day I married Meg, you know, that, well, I completed my vows. Well, that was good. See you in 20 years. I know where this is headed. Probably kids or something. You know, whatever. No, that's not how it works. Like, there's a relationship that's going on. And for believers, somehow we think, well, you know, I believed when I was a young kid and that was good. No, is this continuing to impact your life? You know, is Emmanuel dawning and dispelling the dark clouds that you had this morning? Is he dawning and dispelling the sucky week you have had? Is he giving wisdom to how you're living today? You know, and is your life changing, right? So it's when he's in the weeds of our lives, it's going to be changing. Like, you know, it's like sicking a goat out into the overgrown garden. Like, you know, once the goat's been out there a few days, there's going to be some weeds that are gone because the goat likes to eat stuff. And when Jesus moves in, you're like, he just changes things. There's desires that will change over time. There are things in your life that will change for the better over time. And there might be some things that change, like, in the moment, instantly. We've seen him do that in the lives of people too, where, boom, everything's changed now. So this Advent, would you nurture that relationship with him? Would you, I just want to gently massage this into you, that would you look to him? Would you just let Advent be a season where, man, I've started to put my confidence in all these other things, and Jesus, your wisdom, Jesus, you're the one that needs to dawn about. I'm putting all my confidence in you. Ask him to clarify your life. Beg him to direct you into wise ways. So Emmanuel has come for us. He's come to change us. He's come to take our lives and to make them new. And he's doing all that in who he is and what he's done. Everything's changed in him. So let's press on to know him, that we might make him known to others.